You're listening to the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. This is Drive Time with Travis Wingfield.
Back to throw, Tua looking. Flips it downfield, wide open! Touchdown, Tyreek Hill! Unbelievable!
Just flew by him for a second time. Tua knew where he was going right away.
I would have hit it out there, man. I really hope you soon jump on his bandwagon.
Waddle.
Tua shotgun, back to throw, looking, steps up, fires, touchdown!
We got it!
It's Waddle! His sixth touchdown pass of the day.
Drive Time with Travis Wingfield begins now.
Let me check your pulse if you're not fired up.
What is up, Dolphins, and welcome to the Drive Time Podcast, part of the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network, covering your team, your Miami Dolphins. How's it going, everybody? I am your host, Travis Wingfield, and on today's show, we continue examining the free agent class with a four-spot of new player breakdowns. Long episode today. Safety Deshaun Elliott, offensive lineman Dan Feeney, outside linebacker Malik Reed, and punter Jake Bailey are all here. They are all official. We'll look at their tape, the telling stats, and their respective fits inside the Dolphins program from the Baptist Health Studios, inside the Baptist Health Training Complex. This is the Drive Time Podcast. And right before we get into player breakdowns, it is official. From Monday, the Dolphins exercised Tua Tagovailoa's fifth-year option. He is the first player under the new CBA and one of the first players ever to have that option picked up in the month of March. That deadline, of course, comes in May, but the Dolphins wasted no time here, and it's a no-brainer. For a quarterback who led the NFL in passer rating, was number two against pressure, number one in average depth of target, top 3 to 5 in every quarterback metric used by the most renowned football writers, analysts, and pundits out there. Our own head coach has told you many, many times how much he loves this guy's game, whether you talk about EPA, adjusted yards per attempt. Feel free to look at the leaderboards, and you won't have to scroll very far to find Tua Tagovailoa's name up on those leaderboards. I know I've mentioned this a few times the last couple of weeks. I've been re-watching the broadcast copies of our games from this past season, and I had kind of forgotten about the commentary on Tua during a pair of home games. And going to the home games, I don't watch the broadcast as much on those ones because I don't watch it live and don't pick those things up to go back and re-watch to listen for them. But Adam Archuleta and Jay Feely, and you might recall Archuleta back in the season opener was dogging Tua. But he wound up waxing poetically about how Tua saw the field, the accuracy he throws with. And I mean, I just encourage all y'all to go back and watch it again, because any way you want to see your quarterback win, Tua was doing it during that stretch of play at a high, high level, sliding around pressure, throwing on the move, anticipating. There's a play in the Bears game before the, I think it was the Waddle touchdown in Chicago, where he gets away from an immediate pressure. Like, somebody wins their pass rush rep and is in on Tua in 2 seconds. He sidesteps away from the hit and throws the ball away in the back of the end zone. Survive the play, get to third down, then throw a touchdown pass on third down. I get so descriptive about all of it because I've been watching every throw by Dolphins quarterbacks on tape on the All-22 over and over, multiple times since I wrote the book on Tannehill, which was an in-depth film study of every single throw in his career beginning back in 2012. And that's 10 years. It's a decade. And I have not seen anything close, anything anywhere near what Tua Tagovailoa did this past season. And that was year one in the offense. I positively cannot wait to see what it looks like for him with some continuity coming back in year number two. When I asked Daniel Jeremiah about that and explained to him that he had the same play caller for the first time now in consecutive years since high school, DJ had a genuine wow reaction. Like, that's crazy. It is, DJ. Like, as if to say, yeah, that this is kind of a player who can really benefit from returning to the same offense and the same play caller, who knows how that quarterback ticks and what makes him successful. It's like going back to high school your sophomore year. You know the campus, you know where to find your locker, all that good stuff that comes with familiarity. Everybody operates a little more efficiently when you're familiar with your surroundings. So what exactly is the fifth-year option? There are some stipulations, but the bones of it is this. It allows a team to extend a fifth year on top of a first-round draft pick's original rookie contract of 4 years. Pro Bowl appearances boost the cost of that option. There's also playing time escalators, which is where Tua lands in that category. So for his fifth year, he earns a guaranteed one-year salary that is the average per year of the 3rd through 20th highest paid players at your respective position. obviously here quarterback, over the previous 5 years. So that number comes around $23 million for the 2024 season, which when you look at the quarterback contracts right now, Daniel Jones got over $40 million per year. It's a pretty good bargain there for a top five quarterback last season. Tua was on the fourth year of that rookie contract he signed back in 2020. So this year still relatively or even cheaper than what the fifth year is. So pretty straightforward. Got it? Good. Speaking of continuity, I wanted to begin here because we're evaluating one former New York Jet here on the podcast. We've done two previously. Go back and check those out if you have not heard those episodes of the Draft Time podcast. And I really harped on this with Mike White. Not as much on Braxton Berrios on the Monday podcast, but coming from the Jets offense is akin to players who came from the Niners a season ago. Mike LaFleur was the offensive coordinator there the last 2 years. He spent the first 7 years of his NFL career working under Kyle Shanahan and, by proxy of that, Mike McDaniel as well. And while no offense will ever be the same as far as an exact replica, the same concepts and rules will have some carryover when you've spent 7 years working with the same boss or bosses, right? So then Mike White, Braxton Berrios, and Dan Feeney get to be introduced to a concept in OTAs. They'll be able to say, oh yeah, we did that, and say that was like 85% of the way we did it previously. I can work on that 15%, opposed to saying, this is all new, 100% have to work on that. So it's nice to have that familiarity, almost in the same sense that you had last year with Mostert, Sherfield, and Craycraft coming over from San Francisco. And Coach McDaniel knows what his offense needs, right? He knows how to make it successful. I mean, sixth in total offense, 11th in scoring, despite not having QB1 for the better part of five regular season games and not having the backup finish a game until the Week 18 game. Shouldn't we trust that guy? I feel like you should. So with that, let's go ahead and get into Dan Feeney, who was a third-round pick out of Indiana. And you Locked On Dolphins faithfuls know how much I loved his tape as a Hoosier. He spent the first 4 years of his career, the entirety of that rookie deal, with the Los Angeles Chargers before signing to the Jets and playing there the last two seasons. Last year, we were fortunate enough to get Connor Williams to 100% of the offensive snaps, so we never had to see what life was like without him. But Feeney gives you a very dependable option behind Williams, not to mention the guard flexibility. And if you look at what the reports are on that contract, I don't think it's ruled out that he could be the potential starting left guard this year. He screams top interior bench off the guy to me, though, ideally. And hey, if he wins that job, great. That gives you better depth, better competition is always a good thing. And he's a veteran who's seen everything this league has to offer, experience in a very similar system, and a guy who's well thought of by his coaches and teammates. The Jets, LaFleur, the OC, said of Feeney when he signed with the Jets, he'll just dust off some old books referring to the offense that Indiana ran and the similarities to LaFleur's outside zone scheme. Hey, there it is again with the firing off the ball and athletic ability, because what are the two things we always point to here in the pivot with regards to this Dolphins offense? It was a thing all last offseason prior to the Williams acquisition and then move inside to the pivot at center. And Daniel Jeremiah, for the 45th time, referencing this conference call ahead of the draft on what McDaniel looks for at center: football intelligence and athleticism. You want to talk athleticism? Feeney lettered in volleyball in high school. I've never seen an offensive lineman with the chops to play a sport that's all about quickness, reaction, and leaping ability, and I guess just general balance. But I guess all those traits also carry over to playing offensive line, don't they? Especially in this offense where we continue to cover, that's right, firing off the football. I've even got his high school measurables here. 6'4", 280 pounds on a volleyball court. That is a unicorn out there, especially if you had the mullet mustache too. How about the smart part? I found an interview with Tom Telesco, a former Chargers GM, who was interviewed after they selected Feeney in the third round of 2017's draft. The traits that he said the Chargers liked in Feeney: smart, tough, athletic. Bing, bang, bong. He even touched on the positional flexibility, saying Feeney was a guard tackle in college, but they see him as a guard with traits for center down the road. So really, ultimately, the position flexibility. In fact, he played four games last year and played at three positions, both guards and left tackle. Hasn't actually logged any time at center, but you can see where they would probably want to go the same route as Connor Williams and teaching him that position as he goes along here to potentially be the backup center and have roles elsewhere on the offensive line. He just hasn't played all that much, as a Jet at least. He started seven games with the Jets over 2 years. He totaled 294 snaps, and on those nearly 300 snaps, just seven pressures allowed, only one hit, that was a sack. So six of those were hurries. And that's a pressure every 42 snaps, which is less than 1.5 per game if you prorate that to a full 60-ish snaps per game on offense in a given contest. But back to the football IQ and situational awareness. Man, there's a lot of tape here as a Jet and as a Charger of him getting into the protection slide and then finding additional work. Like, go help your teammates. Go get a rack of ribs. Go put a rusher on the ground when he is trying to work his pass rush move against your friend alongside you. I like the way he functions as far as a five-man unit opposed to working as an individual. To me, he looks very coachable and like a quick study. Smart guy. I think that holsters both value as a starter and as potential depth. Coming into the game off the bench, you know, to play offensive line cold can be really tough, but he demonstrated with the Jets that he could do that pretty well. I think the best tape to look at for Feeney is the 2021 game against the Buccaneers. He went up against Vita Vea, and between Vea's quickness and power, I just don't think there's a better test for an interior offensive lineman outside of Aaron Donald in the NFL. But his ability to get wide off the snap and really kind of hem Vea's inside for those outside zone runs really jumps off that tape. And in that 2021 season, he came into the game as the sixth offensive lineman in seven games. So you have that flexibility as well. And then started the last three games. And in those three games, 166 snaps and just four pressures allowed. It's on 93 pass blocking snaps. That's a great figure. And Pro Football Focus really likes his run blocking too, a 79.3 grade. Again, I don't care about their grades, but I'm giving you the full platter here. And not to mention a stat I do like, 98 pass block efficiency means there's 2% of the time that he's allowing pressures, which would have been right in line with Hunt and Williams' production a year ago. So really intriguing player. Another guy on this offense that I think really goes along with what we talked about with Jeremiah at the Combine. To bring this all full circle, the Dolphins have really locked in on their foundational pieces, and now you round out the margins with guys like Feeney and Berrios and Saubert. Another valuable addition here that doesn't get plastered up on the marquee, but your roster is going to be better for having somebody like Dan Feeney on it. They're not all going to be the splash home run hits, guys. You have to get valuable quality depth, veteran presence, things like that. That to me is what Dan Feeney is. All right, one player breakdown. We got three more to go. Segment two next. I'm very excited to talk about Deshaun Elliott. We'll do that here next, as well as Jake Bailey. That's next. Drive Time Podcast, your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. Segment two on a free agent film breakdown edition of the Drive Time Podcast. We give so much attention to the offense and defense on this show, and I'll be the first to admit that I don't know a lot about the mechanics of kicking or punting or long snapping, really anything in that third phase of the game. It's why I like to ask Danny Crossman those questions at press conferences and just kind of get him to educate me on special teams. This is all to say we have a new punter in town. Jake Bailey comes down from New England, a first-team All-Pro back in 2020, which was the same year Jason Sanders won his All-Pro honors. Bailey spent the first 4 years of his career with the Patriots as their punter and kickoff man. And frankly, a punter drafted in the fifth round by Belichick and the Patriots, a team who values special teams as much as anybody, you just know that's a lively, talented leg that Jake Bailey possesses. Not to mention, he's a righty, and for the Patriots, for as long as I can remember, they've always had a left-footed punter, but not Jake Bailey. But he was injured last year in their Week 9 win over the Colts and did not finish the season, wound up on IR. In his nine games, he averaged 42.08 yards per punt with a 32% inside the 20-yard line rate on his 37 punts, 157 return yards. That's an average of 4.24 yards per return and a gross of 35.1 yards. And that came with a higher than usual touchback rate for his career. 13.5% last year was a big jump over what we had a season ago with Miami, with Thomas Morstead, but just 9.9% over his four-year career. Without watching the punts, it's difficult to say what caused that because the kicks or the coverage, you have to kind of make a determination there, but you're certainly looking to get more towards that career average opposed to what it was a year ago. Like his production dipped the last couple of years here, so we'll be curious to see if he can find that again. For his career, he averages 45.9 yards per punt and a gross of 41.5. The year that he was All-Pro, it was 45.6, which was the highest since Johnny Hecker had it 46.0 in 2016. So we're talking about all-time punting performances. But since 2019, his 18.2 rate inside the 10-yard line ranks second behind only Tommy Townsend in Kansas City, who just got a big contract for punters. It's among punters with at least one punt per game, 66 total punts over those 4 years. Inside the 20-yard line, he was third with 45.3%. Then how about this one? Opponent starting field position after a punt. Since 2019, which was Bailey's rookie year, the Patriots' opponent starting field position after punts was the minus 21-yard line, their own 21-yard line. That's the best in the game, this time topping Tommy Townsend by 0.3 yards. So you want to flip the field? Jake Bailey has been doing that for a long, long time. How about the guys who help get the ball back to the offense after punts? Well, always. DeShawn Elliott, new Dolphins safety. If you listen to the Lions preview podcast from back in October, he was a player we highlighted quite a lot. He was on the injury report and was a guy that I was tracking because, to me, it was a big swing if he played or not in the secondary that needed his skills back there, and it was uncertain if he would, as kind of a Jenga piece of the Lions defense, and he did not play. And Miami's offense, I don't think, punted in that game, and they didn't get stopped very much for touchdowns either. But then he returned, and not to say that he was the reason, but that's when the Lions defense turned things around last season. They held Rodgers and the Packers to 9 points. I can't imagine what would happen for our quarterback's public perception if he scored just 9 points in a game against the Lions. Had a shootout with Justin Fields and the Bears for 30 points. Then the Giants scored 18, Bills 28, Jags 14. So the defense figured it out after that Miami game when DeShawn Elliott came back into the lineup. And the snap counts for Elliott in those games, the Bears 30 points stands out, right? He only played 29 snaps in that game versus 74 against the Packers, 76 against the Giants, 76 against the Bills. And if you watch that Thanksgiving game against the Bills, they gave Allen fits through three quarters, and Elliott was a big part of that. But first, the counting stats here. 42 games, 35 starts. He has two career picks, 10 passes defensed. He's forced three fumbles. We'll talk about that more in a second. Recovered one, 3.5 sacks, 11 QB hits, and 205 career tackles. He was the Ravens' starting free safety in 2020, the only year of his career where he was a full-time starter and healthy. He started the first six games of 2021 before an injury, and then the Ravens added two safeties that year, Kyle Hamilton and Marcus Williams, which led to Elliott's departure and then arrival, of course, in Detroit. But there he played 14 games last season, started 13 of them. But that 2020 season was a big one for him. Five QB hits, 2.5 sacks, 4 passes defense, and 2 forced fumbles. And Pro Football Reference has a stat called approximate value where they kind of give you one number to judge your overall value. His career high was 7, which is above replacement value starter. And in Miami, we already have two really good starting safeties. So that's really good for your third safety. How about the advanced metrics? Well, the Pro Football Focus grades have this dude as literally the most consistent player I've ever seen in terms of their grading. Again, I don't care about the grades, but for posterity, 66.5, 65.6, 69.6, 69.7. Like, within 3 points variation all 4 years is pretty wild. But how nice is that? To have a player in your secondary that you can pretty accurately forecast what he's going to give you. We know what we have in X. We know what we have in Jalen Ramsey, Kaher Kohu, Nick Needham, really. I mean, you know what you're going to get with him. And this is not like saying you're getting great play all the time, but you know what to expect. Javon Holland, Brandon Jones. To me, Elliott slots into that mold. He was really impressive in that big nickel, third safety, sub-package role before he became a full-time starter. So on top of quality depth, if you need somebody to step in on an every-down basis in the instance that we lose Javon or Brandon for a game or two or the whole season, then you can have a trustworthy person in that role, which is nice, right? And we'll get more into his tape in a moment, but back to the numbers. Let's go ahead and start with snaps and alignment. Over 2,300 snaps over 4 years, and those are split as follows. 812 snaps against the run. He has 44 run stops and a missed tackle rate under 10%. That's where you want to be, right around 8-9. I mean, nobody makes every single tackle, but 9.1 for his career is a really good rate, especially when you factor in that he plays in space a lot. Like, coming from depth, we'll talk about this more in a minute, but check out the hit he put on Derrick Henry for a forced fumble back in 2021. He comes from 15 yards of depth to make that play, which is, I mean, it's not easy to do. It's like, you know, it's hitting 100 mile an hour fastball. 103 pass rush snaps, which is a lot for a safety, and we have three guys that can do that now. 21 pressures, that's better than one of every 5 rush attempts. We get home, he gets home, rather, and gets to the quarterback. The sack production's there. But just the threat of the ability to change the way the offense plays with that safety providing pressure, more on that in a moment. From a coverage standpoint, obviously at safety, you play a lot more of these than anything else. 1,438 snaps in coverage. What I like most is what I saw from him in his zone match standpoint. Starting off in zone, as the routes declare themselves, you follow your rules to attach to a man. My high school basketball coach always harped on this. Like, just because we're playing zone doesn't mean you stay in your zone. Like, find a man. You're not covering court. You're not covering grass in zone. But the rules, like an example, a banjo call is something you might have heard of before. It's where, hey, you got first inside move, I got next. Stuff like that is common in defense where you have to read the play and then be on the same page as your teammate and react as your role changes post-snap potentially. But his numbers bear this skill set out. A career passer rating against him of 89.3, two picks, just two touchdowns allowed. He's only drawn three flags in a four-year career, only 181 yards of yards after catch, and that's out of 534 yards in coverage. That's a tremendous percentage. Like we said, a very good striker, very good tackler, and then the stat I always go to, you know, yards allowed per coverage snap, 543 yards on 1,438 coverage snaps is really, really good. To illustrate his versatility, 1,267 snaps in the post, 580 in the box, another 239 down on the line, 233 in the slot, 34 out wide. I'm throwing lots of numbers at you. All that tells you is he plays all over the defense and also 232 snaps on special teams. The tape is fun, man, especially when you think about the fit down here. We talked a lot about what Fangio has ran traditionally. And without trying to delve into the finer points of the playbook and responsibilities, we know that typically it's lighter boxes, high safeties, challenge the offense to run the football and take it out of Patrick Mahomes' hands, take it out of Josh Allen's hands. And those safeties have to have interchangeability and the versatility to align in all the varied positions and responsibilities that safeties can conceivably play. We saw Javon Holland play the post, probably too often, rush the edge, spy the quarterback, do everything, right? Brandon Jones, too, who for my money is the best blitzing safety in football, but also can match up on a tight end. He had great coverage. I think it was against the Vikings, like a good pass rush rep and then two good coverage snaps, like bang, 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 just shows you the entire skill set. Does it all, covers the slot. I think you watched the tape back last year, and losing him was such a blow because of how it allowed the defense to flip pre-snap with a simple adjustment call because both he and Holland were so adept at running any type of route that comes from that safety position. And I say all of that because I found this cut-up that somebody did. It's called Huddle Up Films. They did it before last season when Elliott was a free agent leaving Baltimore. It's actually posted by a fan of the Bears who does a podcast, and he was hoping they'd bring Elliott to the Windy City. And this clip shows Elliott fitting the run from depth in a too-high structure, then lining up off the edge and rushing against a tackle, which, you know, makes the rest of the protection slide vulnerable. We said we'd come back to that. That's how you can change protection schemes, by getting those good rushing safeties down on the line. We saw Brandon Jones get a big force fumble for a touchdown in the opener. We saw Javon Holland in week three put the ball on the turf with Josh Allen that led to a quick Dolphins touchdown. If your right tackle is blocking a safety, it probably means you got an edge rusher on a tight end somewhere else, or a similar mismatch, or you just don't block him at all like the Patriots and Bills didn't do, and then 8 or 29 just runs through your quarterback and gets the ball on the ground. Excuse me. He plays down in the box as the force defender. He plays down the pipe and coverage against the 3 to the strength, which is the, you know, slot receiver essentially, to the strong side of the formation. A very important and tough coverage responsibility. And he covers crossing routes and go, like, he does a lot of different things. When you can trot out three safeties who have that type of versatility and interchangeability, it allows the defense to create those aforementioned looks where you dictate the matchups. Does that make sense? Like, if I'm looking at a big nickel package as a quarterback and any of those three guys can do any of the roles that come with that position, then I am way more likely to make a mistake in my hot, in my protection call, or my general read of the defense. Maybe I misidentify the coverage because they change, they disguise. That's kind of what you get here. Fangio is the ultimate master at creating disguise in the back end. And that's how you get those matchups. That's how you get Jalen Phillips matched up against a tight end. You're going to win that every time. That's how you get Christian Wilkins one-on-one versus a UDFA rookie who's wet behind the ears. Again, it's a fun tape. He arrives with force as a striker. From what I can tell, in limited pass rush opportunities, he has a feel for rush lane integrity. And man, there's a clip of him rushing and mirroring Daniel Jones on a clip where he tries to escape. And since I think the hardest thing to do in defensive football in 2023 is to defend the 4-4 speed a quarterback has once he escapes initial pressure, That's where I think Elliott gives you another answer to facing a Josh Allen, a Justin Fields, et cetera, et cetera. But of those quarterbacks who are big, big human beings, you know, and if you need any validation on Elliott bringing big humans to the ground, just go watch the hit he put on Derrick Henry, like I mentioned earlier. He lays him out for a forced fumble, puts him on his knees. I mean, his tape was full of stuff like that. I referenced the forced fumble production. Two of those, one on the Henry hit, are results of where he just makes a big hit and rakes at the football to get it out. The other was a stick he put on Travis Etienne against the Jaguars last year. You're going to have fun when you watch this tape. Go check him out, Deshaun Elliott. We have one more to go. We'll dive into Malik Reed's tape. That's next here on the Drive Time Podcast. Your host, Travis Wingfield, brought to you by AutoNation. Three of the latest free agent acquisitions accounted for. Let's go ahead and do the fourth here as we roll on with the analysis of all these new Miami Dolphins. A nice mix of marquee talent, big-time starters, every snap players, but also valuable role players and depth here. Let's go ahead and get to the most recent one and yet another piece for Vic Fangio to incorporate into this defense. Is there any question about where Miami thought they had to get better this year on the defensive side of the football? Malik Reed is here. Undrafted out of Nevada in 2019, he earned the admiration of Fangio's Broncos staff by making the club out of camp and then going on to have a really good three-year run with the Denver Broncos. That includes an 8-sack campaign in 2020. In fact, he totaled 15 sacks over his 3 years there. That's great production for a sub-package rusher, man. And he was traded last offseason to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, Fangio was let go by the Broncos, right? And then Reed got traded on August 30th. That's 13 days before they went to... who'd they play in the opener? I forget. Steelers played... Oh, the Bengals, and they destroyed the Bengals in that game. But he had to go learn a completely new defense with just 12 days in prep time. He played 14 games and started two for the Steelers. One sack, 25 tackles, two passes defense, four QB hits. Just wasn't the year you've come to expect from his production. He's played almost exclusively off the edge. Not a guy who's going to kick inside. He's 235 pounds. So you're not going to get, you know, 265-pound Jalen Phillips or 270-pound Emmanuel Ogboh sliding inside. But he is flexible in the sense that he can rush either edge effectively. And that might not seem like a big deal, but it is. That's the hallmark of a great first guy off the bench. Like, hey, Chubb needs a blow. Jalen got nicked up for a few snaps. We need a right outside linebacker for a few snaps. We need a left outside linebacker for the rest of the game until he gets back in. It's nice when that player can be the same guy. And there was too much of a drop-off last year when 15 and 2 were not in the game. I think that Malik Reed gives you some more of that. That's sort of what his role was as a rookie in Denver, playing with Bradley Chubb, and then last year in Pittsburgh. But he was a full-time guy in year 2 and year 3 in Denver, 785 snaps, 737 snaps in those 2 years respectively. Let's go ahead and look at the numbers. Pass rushing, he's got almost 1,300 pass rush snaps in his career and 93 pressures, 16 sacks and 34 quarterback hits. I love his first step, his explosiveness off the edge. We'll talk about that more in just a second. Run defense, 928 snaps, 67 run stops, and 16 tackles for loss. And that's where my ears really perk up because, again, we know about the sub-package rushing, consistent, reliable production that allows you to not suffer that drop-off when you go away from Phillips and Chubb, or Ogboh when he's healthy as well. And you see it in his tape, too. Like, you think that 235 pounds, his game has to be more finesse, right? But man, this tape is full of playing with rush lane integrity, playing the run on the way to the quarterback, and that doesn't just help him make plays. It's doing his job to help secure production from his teammates and their executing of their job. Maintaining gap integrity and the way you run to the football are the two best ways you can measure the love you have for your teammates, and Reed offers both of those in spades. He'll fit right in that department. As far as coverage, just 171 snaps there, 120 yards on those snaps, one touchdown allowed, no interceptions, but he does have six passes defense in his career. For the Steelers, I'm not sure there's a defense that asks more of their linebackers in coverage, and that's what you really see, where you really see Malik Reed's athletic ability come into play. To demonstrate that, he was in coverage on 9% of his snaps with Pittsburgh compared to just 5.5% with the Broncos, so we'll see what it is here, but probably somewhere closer to the Broncos number. But how about this? Played the AFC East last year against all four teams. Three pressures against the Patriots and a season-best four pressures against the Jets. We love to hear that. I think from watching his tape that there are two traits where he consistently wins, and they are translatable across any type of scheme. Number one, I mentioned it earlier, that super quick first step, and then the ability to threaten the edge with speed, a little ghost move, a little up and under move, or under and up move, to get the outside shoulder of that tackle opened up. It stresses the offensive line in a way that opens up that B gap, right? It creates space for a Zach Sealer or a Christian Wilkins or, you know, a David Long blitzing inside. But sometimes when guys do this, they can fly by and wind up behind the quarterback, which is the worst place on the field. You can't do anything from back there. It makes the game 11 on 10. But I swear this past year, this idea became so common with eyes on the quarterback to change your rush path to mirror his. And this is where I really think Malik Reed is very, very good. Whether he has to sneak back inside or just keep playing through and run around the arc, he gets some good rush production and ball production when he does get around the edge because that quarterback flees and he can kind of turn the corner and get to the arm, the right arm, and get the football on the ground. And that speed with his eye discipline is a really, really, really good pairing. So all in all, I just think that this free agent class continues to really round out some specific needs, roles, margins on the team. We talked about how close this team was from taking that 9-8 record and improving it with just one or two plays in several of the games we had last year. Better health can certainly get Miami in better position to capitalize on those opportunities and on those plays, but so does the addition of players like Malik Reed, Braxton Berrios, Eric Sauber, and these signings that don't dominate the scroll on ESPN or whatever, but are so critical for teams who want to make a run each year. All right, our next show, I think, will be Thursday, maybe tomorrow afternoon. I'm not really sure yet. We'll do a mailbag and hear from all the guys and their introduction media availabilities. We have, like, all of them coming down the pipe. We'll come back the following week and do a recap slash reset of the roster, where it is with free agency slowing down here a little bit in the second and third wave. But it never stops. We'll also start getting into more draft content as the calendar turns to the month of April. Plenty to do here with OTA starting up and the draft kicking off next month. But until then, that's going to be my time. You all please be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating. Leave us a review. You can follow me on Twitter at Wingfield NFL. Follow the team at Miami Dolphins. Check out the Fish Tank podcast with Seth and Juice. The Rashad Jones episode is great. Check that out. Zach Thomas next week. Check that out as well. The YouTube channel for the media availabilities, Dolphins Today, Fish Tank and Drive Time content, all that fun stuff. And last but not least, all the five things, pieces in each of these free agents up on MiamiDolphins.com. Until next time, fins up, Caroline Cameron, Daddy's coming home.